This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we explore the relationship between food and style.
I knew from the start that I never wanted to, like, hot glue bread onto my body. Like, I wanted to be able to enjoy it after, and I did.
Food, which is so ephemeral, right, is something that you eat and it disappears. With an image, it remains. It stays alive forever.
Food and fashion align in that they're both lenses through which to look at culture, right? And they're both also tangible things we can use to express ourselves and our identities.
Tune in to Meat in 3, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Annalia Krebs, founder and CEO of Social Nature, a product discovery and trial platform in the better-for-you CPG space. Today, over 500,000 shoppers across North America use Social Nature to sample better products, and over 500 food and health brands, like Haven's Kitchen, have launched their products into retailers like Whole Foods, Sprouts, Walmart, and more. Annalia is a frequent keynote speaker on next-gen retail marketing, D2C marketing, and believes that everyday consumers have influence and that people trust friends, not ads. Welcome, Annalia.
Thank you, Allison.
I am thrilled that you're on the show. We spoke last week, and I very rarely in life find win-win-wins, you know, where everyone is just benefiting from a product or a service. In this case, you know, Social Nature helps consumers find better for you products and sample things, and it helps brands reach consumers in a multiple ways, and it gives us like a bunch of added benefits, which we'll get to. And it helps retailers because the samples are, you know, through couponing where people go into stores and actually pull product off shelf, which makes stores very happy. So that's my assessment of what Social Nature is and why it's so awesome. But maybe you can tell me just a little bit about how you describe it, how you got to it, how it works.
Right on. Well, I almost couldn't have said it better myself. So thank you for doing it justice. But really, yeah, I mean, it starts from a real passion for promoting good stuff and mm-hmm. wanting to see these better for you, better for the planet products stay on grocery shelves, as we all know how competitive it is on the shelf, and then helping more consumers discover these amazing products and these amazing stories behind so many of these products, as all mm-hmm. of these are often mission-led brands. And so we really kind of see ourselves as almost like a bit of like a matchmaker, right?
Yeah.
Where there's the old dating site analogy of, you know, we're here to make the match. And this time it's to make the match between the consumer and the brand and their products. And we want the consumer to fall in love with the products that we introduce them to, so that, you know, the brand gains a new loyal customer for life. And that's how we're, you know, going to help grow this ecosystem, is if we can just make it really easy at the end of the day for people to try something new, in our case, try something better.
Right.
And so that's really the stance that we've always taken, is like, how can we make it so easy? And that's really where we started off with sampling.
And it came to be, I mean, because the first thing I asked you when we spoke was like, how did you come to this brilliant idea? Like,
there's a bigger story there. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it came to be through another business that you were doing.
Yes. Yes. So I've been an entrepreneur for just over a decade now. And so Social Nature has been around for 6 years. But prior to that, I was running a company called Ethical Deal, still in the same vein of promoting good stuff, not junk. But this time it was almost like a green Groupon. So we were promoting greener choices in your city at 50% off using the Daily Deal model. And again, what I loved about that model was it made it easy to try something new. So that's really a common theme between Ethical Deal and now Social Nature, just with different approaches. But it was, we were in our fourth year of running daily green deals, and we were working across North America, and we had a loyal following of ethical shoppers who were using us to discover these new things, whether it was vegan restaurants or organic spas or naturopaths or personal mm-hmm. trainers, like whatever it was. And so fourth year, every year we had a practice, of course, of surveying our community and asking what we could do better, what we could do differently. And so in that fourth year, they said, hey, like, thank you for introducing me to the greener choices in my city, having lots of fun discovering these different things. But what about the greener choices in my home? What about the things that I eat for breakfast, the thing that I, you know, give to my pets or clean my floors with or whatever, put on my skin in the shower? There's got to be some greener choices there. And how can you make it easy for me to try those types of things? And so that was really where we started talking to food and health brand manufacturers, as previously it was more local service, retail restaurants and so forth. And so I remember picking up the phone to a couple larger brands and saying, I have this community of ethical shoppers. They want to try your products. The way we work is 50% off, deal a day. And they're like, oh, no. Like, I can't do 50% off. You know, the retailers
will kill me.
Will kill me, pretty much. And so I was like, oh, shoot, because it had worked so well for all these spas and restaurants, but it wasn't working, it wasn't translating to manufacturers. And so, I was kind of feeling discouraged, just kind of about to hang up and try to think about a different way of doing this. And then they're like, oh, but we can give it away for free. Mm-hmm. So, which is like, what? That's even better than 50% off.
Right.
But as I peeled back the layers and understood, you know, really why they could do that, it was because by sampling, which of course has been around for eons in the consumer packaged goods industry, that is the path to purchase. That is, if you can, you know, give someone a taste of your product, they will walk into the grocery store near them and buy the product, and that helps the retailer, helps the brand, and so forth. So once I understood that, I knew that I needed to kind of shift the how in a pretty big way from the Daily Deal model to a sampling model. And it was such a big shift from, the brand name Ethical Deal was so kind of entrenched in our community's mind as kind of deal of the day. Yep. And then our website, it was like more or less an e-commerce website where people, you know, I made money on consumers purchasing green deals every day. Right. So the whole business model was changing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm going to need to create a new company. In response to this community members asked. But what I really loved in the continuity that was there was certainly introducing people to greener choices. Now it was just coming from the city in their neighborhood into the home, which honestly felt like one step closer, to shifting people's everyday habits, not just their weekly habits. That was exciting. And then again, that continuity of making it easy. I mean, how much more easy is it than giving
getting
something
a free product?
Exactly.
I think anyone who listens to this podcast regularly knows that, you know, when we were in Anaheim for last year's Expo West and it was canceled and it was, you know, March 5th or whatever it was, and there was this possibility of a pandemic, and we just kind of were like, you know, we're about to open 500 Whole Foods stores when we went, you know, national with them, and we kind of looked at each other and we're like, there's going to be no samples. Like, this is, even if it's a couple months, it's still not a, how are we going to launch in all of these cities across America? You know, the
don't know what Haven's Kitchen is and has never seen sauce in a pouch. And so for us, the idea that, you know, you can, it, because a lot of people, you know, they send samples, but for a refrigerated product where you have to buy a case and it's $49 for a case, like, that's not a great viable alternative for us either. We'll do it. It's not ideal, but it's not a scalable sampling program. So this was just like, wait, we get a consumer survey. We get to get pull off the shelves because we're, you know, sending people coupons, and then we get reviews. And the reviews are uploaded to our website. So I think we have something like 4,000 reviews on our website. Awesome. You know, they're thoughtful and they're written out and they say what they do with it and they say what they loved. And the ones that, you know, I think we had, you know, I don't know, mostly it was like 4.8 stars or something or whatever. It was like mostly 5-star reviews, but even the ones that were, you know, the occasional 3 or the occasional 2-star, those were really helpful too, because a lot of times they were like, I couldn't find this at the store, which is very helpful to us, you know, or, you know, I thought the price point looked high, you know, for how much was in it. Those are things that are great to know. Because A, it helps us sort of like talk to the buyers potentially about, you know, what's going on, look into voids where we are, and also, you know, speak to the issues that people love about it more, and also speak to the issues that people might not love about it, you know, before they try it. So,
I love that. I love that there's, and that's, you know, I love that you've had a positive experience, and I'm glad we got the match right, back to the dating analogy, 4.8 out of 5 stars. People fell in love with it. That is exactly what we want. And it's all those value points that, going back to kind of the founding story, it's, you know, I knew that I needed to, now I needed to create, you know, if it was going to be free for consumers, I needed to create value for the brands.
Right.
And so that's where we really started thinking through, you know,
what do we need?
What do we need? What do they need to succeed? And learning more about, you know, the pain points and staying on shelf and hitting these, you know, velocity targets and growing, into new households and the importance of new customer acquisition and all of these things we started learning about. And that's where all those layers started coming in. And then more recently, of course, as more brands, even those who really focus on in-store, have gone online, at least, you know, whether it's click and collect or whatever online means for them, that's where the reviews and the email opt-ins and so forth also came into play.
Right. Yep. I want to talk about that too after the break. But before we go to the break, I also want to say there's something also, you know, not every consumer is of the same potential value. So, you know, even if, you know, I did however many, you know, demos, right? I mean, I went to stores all over the Northeast and I was standing there and, do you want to try some sauce? And, you know, building connections, and some of them you just knew, like, they were like, nope, I make my own, fine, I'll try it, but no. And then some of them you could see that they were kind of like looking for something to put with their lamb chops, and you were like, I'm gonna be helpful to this person, you know, and like, this is my consumer. How do you guys, because I know that your consumer is very valuable, and like you said, it's a match. It's not just like, you're not just throwing out, you know, fish food and seeing who comes and eats it. There's a method, and I'm curious about that.
Sure. Yes. So our secret sauce is really, in part, the data that we collect on our members. So when our community members sign up to Social Nature, you know, we interview them. We ask all sorts of questions, everything from the usual dietary preferences, right through to their household makeup, you know, whether they are expecting, we even know if people are expecting a baby. It's kind of creepy. Like, you know, we'll ask them, and, you know, it's their choice to disclose, but we'll know what pets they have. We'll know, You know, what they're looking for is sugar free important to them? We'll start to understand their health goals. Mm-hmm. So we start to understand, you know, are they looking to reduce stress? Are they looking to improve digestion, increase fitness? And it's been, and there's lots of, so there's lots of different ways that we can target, about 50 different data points we collect, the usual demographics, of course. And then the brand, when they do work with us, they get to ask some custom mm-hmm. questions on top of the profile data that we have. And so this is where, you know, we can't have all the data on everything, even as much as we would like. So if there is something that you'd really like to target by, let's ask the question and let's drill down on that. So often things like category users, right down to the most specific category ever, we can drill down into, or even consumers that purchase competitive brands, sometimes that's a request, or consumers that live around stores that either have high sales or lower sales if they're trying to support struggling regions. So almost any targeting request that you can dream up, we can do it between the profile data and the custom questions.
Yeah.
And so that's really where we can drill down and target. And then, of course, there's also the interaction that we can track on our platform as our community, you know, engages with different product categories or writes reviews on different products. And if we see trends around, oh, this type of consumer likes these types of products, our algorithm will invite them to the next similar product campaign. So there's things on the front end and back end.
Amazing. All right, let's take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about sampling and COVID and everything. So,
awesome.
Okay, we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
I'm back with Annalia Krebs from Social Nature. Okay, so we talked about sort of step one. Step one is, you know, you have this community of consumers. You know who they are. You know if they live within 10 miles of a Whole Foods. You know how many people in their households. You know how often they buy sauce. All of that, right? And then you work with the brand to figure out, are there any specific other questions that you want to do?
You got it.
For us, I know that we've done sort of campaigns. So when we launched barbecue, we did a campaign specifically around that. When we wanted to bump up, you know, things at Fred Meyer, we did a campaign around that. So how, I think, can you explain sort of like how a brand, you know, how a brand would come to you with a specific sort of need and how you would help them build a campaign around that?
Sure. Yeah, so there's a couple use cases, very common use cases that we get, and sometimes it can depend on where the brand is at in their life cycle. So mm-hmm. I'll start with emerging brands. So often, let's say you're an emerging brand, you're in, you know, 300 to 500 stores, 300 to 1,000 stores, let's say. And so here, you know, you're probably going to have a key account within that, whether it's Sprouts or Whole Foods, or and maybe you're only in, you know, 500 Walmarts, and mm-hmm. and you've got to support that key account. And so in those cases, we will ask for the brand's distribution list. Say they're in 500 stores at Walmart, right? They'll give us their physical distribution list, and we'll start to geo-target around those 500 stores so that we're not wasting any right. samples, right? Because so often with when you're sending samples out direct to consumer, whether it's a box program or otherwise, mm-hmm. you don't know if those consumers are living near your 500 points of distribution. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really important for us to do that geo-targeting, especially for those emerging brands that are still growing their distribution footprint. And so alternatively, of course, if they want to go in on that key account focus, then again, we have those lists. We'll target around those stores. We'll ask our community members, do you regularly shop at Whole Foods Market? Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a co-branded coupon. So we'll actually highlight, you know, the logo of that retailer on the coupon, making it crystal clear that this coupon is just to be used at that specific retailer.
Right, right.
And then we'll also support that campaign with a personalized store locator where the consumer actually... we make it easy. We show them the three Whole Foods stores that yeah. they can redeem that coupon at.
It's so crazy. This is so cool.
It gets pretty detailed. It's really, but that's really where we get those high response rates. I mean, we right. get 70% response rates on the back end of these couponing campaigns, which is about 10 times higher than industry average. So
yeah.
that's, you know, it takes those details to get there. But yeah, supporting key accounts, supporting specific regions or regional distribution, very common use cases. And then as you kind of get more established as a brand, perhaps you're in 10,000 plus stores at this point, you might actually choose to work with us and support all of your distribution and do what we call a retailer agnostic campaign. And that would make sense if you know, you want consumers to know that you're available at these 10,000 points of distribution, and you just want the consumer to go into whatever store is most convenient for them.
Right.
And so we can support that type of programming as well. And then the other use case are brands that they just want some reviews to syndicate to their website or to their e-commerce channels. As we know, Walmart.com, Kroger, Albertsons, Sprouts, all of these retailers are looking to compete against Amazon. And part right. of that is growing their review footprint. And so a lot of brands will come to us and say, hey, you know, I need reviews across my entire product line. And I need to syndicate them to my e-commerce channels. And so we can turn that around in, you know, 6 weeks.
So question about that, because yeah. I know that we got, you know, we got how like our 4,000 or whatever it is, I think it's more reviews, and that we uploaded them to our own website.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's like, even though we don't have a huge D2C business, I know that it's kind of, I think it's important to have reviews there, even if it's not going to be a huge part of your business. But does it 100%. Also do something in like this SEO world? Like, is there some other added benefit to having reviews on your own website, even if D2C isn't like a huge part of the sales?
100%. And you nailed it. It's really all about that online product discovery. And what we've seen is, even for the perishable or frozen products, the path to purchase starts online. And what I mean by yep. that is from a discovery yep. standpoint, right? So people are Googling or whatever search engine they're using for, you know, insert best product reviews or top rated product or where to buy or discount or recipes, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so I just think of reviews as another form of content. So just as you're looking at, you know, building up your blog strategy and your other types of content on your website, reviews are a piece of content that's going to help influence the purchase, even if that purchase happens offline. And
right.
so, and especially for these online retailers as well, I mean, that's all about SEO. If someone's searching for a product on, you know, Walmart.com, and if that brand has more reviews than another brand, you're going to start to populate higher on search results, just as you would on Google.
Right. And that's my second question. So I know that we can take those reviews and we can populate them or however upload them or whatever it is onto our website. Are we also able to do that to the retailer's website?
Yes, you can. And so the how on that, this, it's a bit of a multi-step. Mm-hmm. So we've partnered with a couple different providers in the space that have partnerships with retailers. And so our reviews are fully compatible with all the retailers, everyone except Amazon, I'm afraid.
Yeah, of course.
But that's a different topic. So yeah, we can syndicate to the Walmarts, the Sprouts, the Albertsons, the Krogers, the Targets of the world through these partners that we have. And so if a client is interested in that, we'll just refer them to one of our partners and then those reviews will easily get imported.
Let's do that. Exactly. Note to self. Okay. So I'm kind of walking through the process. I'm thinking, and again, from the brand side, because most of the people listening to this are on the brand side. So, you know, you're setting up this campaign, you're already targeting consumers that are already more likely, you know, have moved down into your funnel from random, because of the pre-work that you guys have done. And then you're sending out coupons specifically to people, either, you know, sending them specifically to stores that are geo-targeted or, you know, sending them to key accounts that you want them to support. Then they come back and you get all of your reviews, which are, you know, glowing and amazing. And then, and this is something you and I talked about, we also get emails.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So that is a huge piece of the pie too, because, you know, those consumers, you know, people have heard me on this too, talking about, you know, it's really the only channel where you are actually communicating directly with your consumer. Like, you really are talking to them and you're sending them exactly what you want, and you can see how they respond in a way that you just can't through paid ads. And I remember you saying, like, that social nature consumer is a valuable consumer, and communicating with them is really important, and saying, and we just sent ours last week where it's like, hi, thank you for trying our, you know, our sauces through social nature. We hope you like it. Here's a discount code for, you know, if you want to buy directly, let us know, blah, 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 blah. But can you just tell me a little bit, why is that consumer so valuable and why is it so important to keep in touch with them?
Yes. So, I mean, these are consumers that, let's talk about that journey for a second, because I think it's so, there's a lot happening before they've tried your product, right? Mm-hmm. So your product has gone up on our website. We've email marketed your product and all of its kind of features and benefits directly to our community. Now, there's a myth out there, right? That if you put free product out there, everybody is going to respond. That's not the case. There's so much noise and distraction in people's inboxes nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many different things trying to get the consumer's attention. So for those consumers, maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 20%. If you're really lucky, it's 30%.
Right.
That, you know, read the email and converted and clicked on that email. Mm-hmm. That's already, you've captured their attention. So something about your product and are the features and benefits and the beautiful images and video and all the things that we do to, you know, light up your brand and tell your brand story to our community, that caught their attention. So,
right.
So you've got their attention. Now they have answered a 5-question survey telling you some interesting information, you know, and from there, we funneled it down even further based on our targeted criteria, which is based on your ideal consumer profile, mm-hmm. right? So not everybody who even expressed interest and clicked on the email and answered
coupons.
The 5 questions, mm-hmm. exactly, gets the product, because we're weeding it out along the way. And so now that we've got those, whatever it is, let's say it's 5,000 people that have gone into the store, you know, got off their couch, gone to the store,
right?
Right? found your product in the store. Sometimes even that can be a battle to find products in the mm-hmm. store, right? And then come back and written a review. I mean, yeah. like,
they're
how
like
valuable
your best
is
friend.
That consumer?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
exactly. So, and you know, they live near the retailer where you're sold at. So again, if they like your product, now it's easy to buy your product on an mm-hmm. ongoing basis. So all the things. So now we just need to keep top of mind. And that's where the email opt-in comes into play, where right. if you can email them and you just remind them about your brand and, you know, whether it's recipes, whether it's content, whether it's your brand story, whether it's offers, whether it's an announcement that you're, you know, launching a new product, whatever it is. Those are the people that we just want to give, you know, a friendly reach out to at least yeah. once a month and stay top of mind. And then next time they're in the grocery store, right, whether it was that recipe or another discount, yep. Whatever it was.
They'll remember.
Yeah. And they'll put you in their basket.
And then let's talk a little bit about the retailer side, because, you mm-hmm. know, I I think I've also talked about this, like, you know, a retailer deck when you're trying to get a buyer to take you, right? It's obviously, here's the brand story, here's our mission, here's our product, here's what the category looks like now, here's why we're different. And then they all want to know, how are you going to promote, you know? And the mm-hmm. way that you used to promote was, you know, you committed to a certain number of, you know, promotions, like yellow tags. We're going to do, you know, 4 at $5.99 and 2 buy one get ones or whatever it is, right? And they wanted to know that you would buy an ad in the circular, you know, which is no longer. And they wanted you to commit to demos mm-hmm. because, you know, like I've been saying this now, I've been doing this podcast for 3 years. There are a couple of things that I have learned over and over and over again. And one of them is that you do not ring the bell when you get the first sale. You ring the bell when you're turning there and you have consistent sales and you're like, your velocities are growing, because a lot of retailers will give you a chance on shelf. But if you don't make the most out of that space and do everything you can to sell and to move, then they're going to put someone else in the next year. So mm-hmm. part of getting them excited about the brand is definitely telling them how you're going to support them. And we've definitely been saying we will be doing social nature campaigns specifically around you, retailer. And they're starting to realize that that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. starting to recognize the name. I think it's also, you know, they, when you write to them after 3 months and you say, you know, how we're doing there, and you're able to say, you know, look at these reviews, because a lot of times in the social nature reviews, they'll say, I bought this at Whole Foods and it was very easy to find and it was next to the cauliflower, and that night I made a gingery miso cauliflower. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We quote those directly to our retailers.
Love it.
You know, so because good. You have 4,000 people responding, you know, and then when you have hundreds of them saying, and this is what we just did when we pitched for next year, I want an XYZ, and you see a theme, right? And like, yes. even if 200 of the 4,000 say, I wish this came in a bigger size, or, you know, I would love to see this flavor from this brand, you can literally just take those and use them, you know? I mean, so those are how I'm thinking.
Yes.
And I think, you know, again, the pulling, they all want to see product get sold off the shelf. How do you have any other thoughts about how this really just will excite the retailers? Or how
yes.
it has? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. We always share, kind of a campaign insights report with each campaign. And so often our clients will say, can you send me like a PowerPoint, like the raw file? Cause I'm taking screenshots and slides into
right.
my next retailer presentation. So
we did
definitely,
that.
Yes, yeah. yes. We know it's being used. So often the slides that kind of, or the insights, I should say, that light up our brands is the, so to your point, you know, the buyer is asking, how are you different? And, you know, with all the other products on the shelf. And so one of the questions we commonly ask our community members is, why are you interested in this specific product? And mm-hmm. how would you rate the product attributes from most important to least important? And so right. there's only so much, you know, room on your package to state what's important. Right. And there's yep. only, and if you have a unique attribute, which so many, of course, natural and organic products do, then on the competitive set on the shelf, if you're the only, you know, product that has a specific attribute that's less common in your category, and if right. that was one of the top three reasons that consumers wanted to try your product, that starts to become a compelling narrative for mm-hmm. you should have my product on the shelf, especially when that narrative is from, you know, several thousand people.
Right. It's a real sample size. It's this a isn't significant, like, you know, your four friends. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's just it. I mean, when we think about the alternative, I mean, it's a focus group, and usually it's, you know, 20 to 50 people in a focus group.
Yeah.
Or it's a survey. And if you're lucky, you'll get a couple hundred responses.
Yeah.
But so often this is into the thousands. And right. so it is significant data. And we have data not only on those people who have tried the product, but also those who expressed interest in the product and hadn't even tried it, right. which is particularly interesting because right. now that's speaking to the retailer, right? There's a consumer walking through your aisle. They haven't tried your product, but they're looking at the different product, they're pulling it off the shelf, and they're looking at what's on the packaging. And that's, we're translating that experience into a digital experience, right?
Yeah.
We're promoting the package. We're saying, here's our digital shelf with all the different products. Which products catch your eye? And that's the click, right? And then they're yep. answering the survey as to why that product caught my eye. And in this case, you know, they've probably watched a video about the product.
Right.
And they've looked at, you know, why it's better and the ingredients, and they've gotten the information that, you know, we can share in that product listing. And then they're responding to those five questions. So it really is an indicator of consumer demand. And so we've had our clients even start to seed interest for new products mm-hmm. that they aren't even having on the shelf yet, but are using this consumer demand data to, you know,
ask questions
right. and validate, you know, even flavor options. What yep. flavor would you like?
No,
what
100%.
Format would you like? What price would you pay? I yep. mean, these are the questions that normally, again, you would ask a focus group, but you can ask our community members as part of your sampling campaign, even for products you're not sampling yet.
Yeah, it's so cool. And going back to the retailer, there's nothing that a retailer likes more than like de-risking taking on a new product, right?
Yes.
So if you're basically saying, you know, because I mean, I'll be honest, everyone knows this who listens, like, we didn't have anything on the front of our pack. Like I was like, everyone will know what this is. Everyone will know what to do with it. I don't know. People are kind of like, at this point they can look at the back of the ingredients and they can see that it's vegan and gluten free, and they can see, you know, but that is not the case. The retail shelf is still, maybe that's the case with D2C brands or like digitally native, like super brand forward brands, but the grocery store shelf, there is stuff that needs to be on the front of the package.
Mm-hmm.
And there needs to be, even for us, like explanation of what to do with what's in the package, unless it is a very, I mean, you see crackers that are like, put a cucumber on me, dip me into hummus, right? Like,
yeah,
crackers are not hard, yeah. right, to know what to do with. And yet, like, there are some things that we all still have to do. And when you're like us and you're kind of breaking into a new place in the store and you're trying to create a new category and you're trying to explain what, you know, harissa and romesco and chimichurri are to consumers that haven't necessarily seen those flavors, it's very scary to be a buyer and give us, you know, 16 inches on their shelf.
Mm-hmm.
They want to try. They want to be innovative. They want to keep young people coming. They know that there's something trendy about what we're doing, but it's scary. And if we can de-risk that for them and say, listen, 3,000 people have said These are the three most important things. And these three things are on the front of our package, loud and clear. It just gives them a little bit of like rest, I think, you know?
Yes, yes. And to your point, the usage occasions too, right?
Right.
Like, and here is how the consumer is using them based mm-hmm. on these X thousands of people that have tried the product. And so, you know, it's not just this one narrow use case, it's these 10 other use cases. Mm-hmm. And so that can also help. And I mean, for the retailers, we're sending them, you know, either shoppers that already shop at their store since they live near the retailer,
right.
But they're going into the store, they're not just going in to pick up one thing, right?
Right.
they're buying their groceries. And so we're encouraging more visits. We might even be sending them new shoppers to the
yep.
store that haven't yet gone. So yeah, I mean, it's all good news for the retailer. And just to your point around the promotional piece too, for them to know that the brand has access to a community of new customers that they can drive into the store,
yes.
that's an attractive proposition.
Yeah. So I want to kind of talk about two things that you mentioned that almost seem at odds with each other. And this is where social nature seems to like hit the nexus or the axis or whatever, I don't know the word in math. So, you know, sampling has been around forever. To your point, path to purchase is giving people a taste. As much as we think that consumers are driven by the way that something looks, at the end of the day for a grocery store product, they're not going to spend $6.99 on something they've never tried before for the most part. Like a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't. And that's why anyone who says like, don't go on sale, they're wrong. Like you have to go on sale because you don't want to promote to the point where your only consumers are people that buy you when you're on sale. But
yeah.
it's a way to give people access to the product. They try it, presumably they love it, and then they want to buy it again. So sampling, you know, to your point, physical tasting it, touching it, holding it, trying it is critical. And the counter to that is that the path to purchase starts online. That now we live in a digital world where consumers are doing much more discovery through Instagram and Pinterest and, you know, on Google and on YouTube and on Amazon and everywhere. And you've brought together the two.
Mm-hmm.
So people can explore and, you know, like start to discover things online, but then they can also have this, you know, tactile experience
yeah.
and take action and sample
yes.
it. Do you think that, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think COVID has just sort of changed things permanently? Do you think it just sped up what was already starting to happen where, you know, demos as nice as they are, they're really expensive. You can't control what's going on in like all these cities across America with like demo teams you've never met. Sometimes you don't even have product for them to demo with. Like it was such a cumbersome, you know, analog thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you
mm-hmm.
think this is just demos have kind of, you know, they're going to fade off into the sunset?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think, I think we'll see new form, like new innovation, right, around sampling. So because sampling itself is here to stay, how we sample is what's going to change. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, the traditional in-store demo, as you just described, I mean, I know some retailers are bringing that back and,
mm-hmm.
and
they're going to try.
They're going to try. but I really hope that we do see more innovation. I mean, our programming has literally been nicknamed or coined a digital demo
mm-hmm.
because of, you know, some of the parallels, but then also some of the points of difference. But so I'm encouraged, like there's so much cool stuff that's coming out of when we were forced to do something differently. Mm-hmm. And so I'm positive and optimistic around that. I hope that the retailers will be embracing that just as much as everyone yeah. else is. That's really my hope. And I know it can be, slower to change there. For another thing that I hope and I do know will be happening, we're part of, we're watching this very closely, is digital couponing, right? Mm-hmm. So, we're going to see that come through in a bigger way over the next couple years. And that is going to for sure, be adopted by retailers as well. So things are going to change. I mean, I'm already seeing retailers start to develop more and more of their own loyalty apps, right? And to mm-hmm. kind of leverage digital technologies to offer their suppliers more targeted options. So I think there's a leveling up across the whole industry as we are using more digital first technologies to drive in-store impact. I think that's really the big overarching shift, is using digital to drive in-store impact.
Right.
And for better targeting, for more feedback, for email opt-ins, for all the reasons.
Yeah.
Social Nature was there 6 years ago, so we have
right.
we have a bit of a head start on that, you could say. But I know there's going to be more innovation coming, and
yeah.
that's good for the industry. So I'm excited.
So a couple more questions before we have to wrap up. I'm curious. You see so many brands, and I love it when people just have this like that 30,000 foot view. And I'm curious what you think, what do you see that brands are doing where you're like, ooh, wow, nice. That's smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what do you see brands doing where you're like, I wish I could just, pick up the phone and say, here's how I could help, mm-hmm. sort of mistakes and then, wins.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to make all the good, I want to do all the good ones.
Okay. It'll probably blend together because sometimes, it's just the other side of the coin. So
yeah, totally.
We'll kind of talk about them as they come to me. So, yeah. So on the email marketing front, I mean, to your very point, you're a perishable brand, yet you are building an email marketing mm-hmm. strategy into your mix. And so I think this is a common mistake that a lot of, so that's good. You're doing that good, but a common Thanks. Mistake a lot of perishable or frozen, or non-D2C brands do is they'll be like, oh no, like I'm in store, so I don't need to be online.
Right.
And that is a huge mistake. Whether it's developing an email strategy and building your own direct to consumer strategy, it doesn't have to be to directly sell. That's right. The thing. It's just to stay top of mind. It's to build a brand connection with those consumers. You can be testing your own, you can do your own focus groups with mm-hmm. once you have, a sizable newsletter audience. And if you've kept them engaged on like a biweekly or a monthly basis, they'll be responsive to
yep.
The different things and asks you might have for them. So such a huge possibility, and absolutely you do not need to be selling directly online to be able to invest in that. So I encourage yeah. that for all brands. So I love that you're doing
and
that.
A question for you there, because I think the response to that I've heard a lot is that it's not that brands don't necessarily want to do it. It's that they don't know how mm-hmm. to like attach a return on that investment. Like they feel a little bit like they're just like putting things out into the ether. And for the digitally native guys, like it's very easy to see the click-through rate and, how many people actually end up buying from that email. If you're sending people, similar with ads, you're kind of sending people out into the store and you never know if that's actually worked,
mm-hmm.
And I think what our brain just kind of shifted into there doesn't have to be a direct return on that investment from a sales perspective, but we feel like, building that community will have, it's a long game.
Yes.
In some way, right?
Yes, it's a long game, and you can measure engagement. So say you produce a bunch of video content, you can measure how many views that video got, especially if you, you know, if you host it on your own platform or click, you know, click throughs, that's engagement. So you want, you definitely, I mean, a measure of success, if you're not selling online, 100% should be engagement. How many people are engaging with your content? And my other favorite measure of success is how many of them are sharing your content, right? So any kind of, referral programs, even if it's, entering a contest, right? So there can be different contesting things that you can do on your social or on your website itself, where you can also help build your email list in a really inexpensive way.
Right.
So there can be hacks like that that you do. And that's just, it's all about staying top of mind and getting them excited about your brand. I mean, the more that you can kind of be sharing also a little bit like behind the scenes. I love brands that do this. So great for especially engaging with a younger consumer base, just showing your authentic self and your brand story and how, hard and fun it is to grow a brand just helps people connect with you. And so I love brands that are doing that. And the other thing is a little bit more nuanced, but I want to share it because I think it's kind of a great secret weapon. And that is, so often brands with their advertising strategy will target by demographics. And, you know, it's what we've all been taught in school and whatnot. What's the income level, the age range, gender, all those things. But nowadays, I mean, marketing by behavior or marketing by usage occasion is so much more powerful. Yeah. First of all, you know, you're going to expand your audience. Let's say you were kind of more part of the traditional mindset of marketing by age range. Mm-hmm. Well, that's narrowing your scope, whatever it is, to the 30 to 45 year olds, or if that's your sweet spot. But, you know, if you're a plant-based product, let's just say, for example, why don't we market to people that are interested in plant-based, period? Or people that purchase in store, people that purchase online. Those are behaviors, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or marketing, you know, marketing by usage occasion. People that are looking for convenient, healthy meals weeknight dinners.
Right.
Right? Like
for example.
Plugging's Kitchen. So but the more that you relate in your advertising using those either usage occasions through images, videos is so powerful, of course, copy, and then using the marketing by behaviors in your Facebook or Instagram or wherever you choose to advertise, segmenting. I think I've seen some brands do that, especially actually, interestingly, a lot of brands have been doing that in the supplement space which was traditionally, for lack of a better word, sometimes a little more old school in their marketing.
Right. Yeah.
But now I'm starting to see, sleep better. Like, who doesn't want to sleep better?
In their
advertising, and it's just so powerful. So that's another thing that I've seen
amazing.
Brands do well.
No, amazing. Is there anything now that, you know, you're speaking to, I don't know, a couple thousand, you know, early stage founders and marketers and people who might be eventually, is there anything you want to tell us that's been on your mind that you would like to share, that you would like us to keep in mind, or that you want us to stop doing?
Well, and I'm sure some of you have heard this before, but I'm such a fan of really digging deep with specific retailers before
going live.
Jumping to the next retailer or next region. So you can do this on a regional basis, which is really powerful, or focusing on a couple of key accounts, winning there. I mean, if you're winning there, other retailers will come and knocking, mm-hmm. right? Whereas yep. if you spread yourself too thin and now you've got so many different, you know, partial regional points of distribution with different chains across different regions to support from a marketing perspective, it just becomes harder and harder to create that density in terms of top of mind consumer awareness and so forth. So those brands that really just zone in and I know it's so hard to say, but right. even say no yeah. to those retailers that come and say, I can, you know, do a test with you in this other state or yep. Whatnot. And just, you know, no, not now. That is the discipline that right. I'm seeing, you know, pay off for those emerging brands.
I think that that's particularly good advice for all of my friends that are digitally native that are trying to figure out their retail strategy. Mm-hmm. There are more and more brands now that are like D2C brands that are now trying to figure out retail mm-hmm. Because they've, you know, hit a certain threshold and they've done really well and now it's time. And, you know, similar to like me building out a D2C strategy, they're completely different businesses. But when you think about kind of, you know, you're a brand that has digital success, you're doing well, now it's time to think about what retailer is going to be the best fit now that I can build the case and I can really go in with them and I can, you know, own my set and win, and then they'll come from there, you know, the mm-hmm. rest. I think that's great advice. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. so... for people who want to be consumers on Social Nature and fill out those amazing surveys and get coupons to get free samples, where should they go?
They should go to socialnature.com. Anyone can sign up, but again, we'll act the role of the dating site and match you just to those products and brands that we think you'll fall in love with. So you can just check out socialnature.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all the places where we have lots of fun contests and different ways to engage. So it's really, at the end of the day, I feel like we have, you know, 600,000 going on a million members yeah. behind us in this mission of introducing people to good stuff and they're really helping us spread the word and influencing their friends and family to try natural too. So
yep.
I see the community as very much like the yeah. people behind this mission.
Huge. And if you are a brand, I guess the best thing to do is just DM me. I don't want to be a gatekeeper, but like, I don't think we should give your email out into the world right now. You might be getting a lot of incoming. So I don't know, unless.
No, yeah, that's a great idea. Okay. Yeah, if you're so willing, we also have a brand facing website. It's just socialnature.com/marketing.
Yes, and, go there.
And they can go there and just, for sure, mention that you've heard about Social Nature on this podcast. And
would be helpful. Thank you.
That would be great. I'm pretty accessible. We're a team of about 25 people now, and there's a great team in place. But I can't stop talking to brands and brand owners. I just get so, this is why I get out of bed every morning to help you guys succeed.
Well, Annalia, thank you so much for shining your light on us and lighting up our brands and doing this. This is a great business. It's great for us. Like, I feel like an infomercial, but I'm really not. thank you for coming on the show. Amazing having you.
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad that you've had a great experience awesome chatting.
And Amanda, thank you for engineering as always. And listeners, thank you so much for listening. It's crazy. It's been 3 years, like nutso. But I really appreciate all the support and the feedback and, of course, sharing this with other founders or soon-to-be founders, because we all need help and no one knows what the hell is going on most of the time. So I'll be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.